In what ways is conscription a push factor for migration in Syria?
So I think conscription is a huge push, particularly for men sort of 17 to in their 40s, and also for families, both who are thinking about their children who are going to become military-aged males and be subject to conscription, but also for husbands and brothers and other people. So from the interviews that we did, we found that many people fled because of conscription, and sisters and mothers were telling stories about why they got their children or their brothers or their husbands out of harm's way.
How were they doing that?
So in many cases, they were just fleeing the country. They would just make some sort of plans to flee the country, or they would flee from their hometown or their home city to a place where the government didn't have control. And then if the government control was going to come back into that area, they would then move to another place or eventually across a border. The other thing that you saw happening, or that we still see happening, is that people would pool their resources. So families would borrow money or get relatives to give them money in order to get the one man who was threatened with forced conscription into the Syrian military out, because it would cost money to pay for smugglers to get them across borders or whatever. It was very much a family pushed enterprise to kind of get people out of harm's way.
In what ways are Syrian men able to defer or make themselves exempt from service?
So I think those situations were really much more applicable in the pre-war period, in the times of sort of normality. And those exemptions were being the only son of a family, particularly when there was also no father in the family anymore who had died or whatever. And also people could postpone their conscription by being a university student. And so people would stay in university. They wouldn't then have their military service until after they had graduated from university. But I'm not sure those cases apply anymore, particularly in the last 2 or 3 years. From the few cases that I've heard from men who have fled, they are being conscripted, even if they are the only man in the family, the only son of the family. And with the number of universities that are closing or that close temporarily, or people who just can't afford to go to university and so they have to drop out, it's a real problem. In addition, the Syrian regime is in need of soldiers. I think they have given up on many of these exemptions that they used to have. In the time of war, I think a lot of this stuff just flies out the window, and people, they're just looking for able-bodied men, and they will take them.
How much of life, employment, and social mobility is actually linked to military service?
Every Syrian carries around a number of documents in addition to their identity card, and Syrian men carry around what they would call daftar jesh, which is the military service card. So for a lot of jobs and a lot of and government services and all those sorts of things, people had to provide this military card that proved that they had done their military service, or that they had an exemption, or they were still studying, or things like that. So those documents are still important, and if you don't have them, you can't do all sorts of things, including getting government jobs, etc. So there's that very legalistic element of serving in the military. But on a whole other element about social mobility, if you haven't served in the military, you're basically wanted by the Syrian regime. And so you can't really move around the country. You can't move around your city anymore if you're wanted by the regime. And so there is no way for people who haven't done their military service to live a life of any kind. So either, I think they have two choices. They maybe have three choices. They stay at home and never leave the house, which is not guaranteed, because the Syrian regime will come knocking on doors and come search homes for people. Or they go into the military, or they flee to non-government controlled areas, but that's not particularly a safe place to be because the government bombs those areas. Or they leave the country. And so those are the three choices in front of men who are between the ages of 18, particularly ones who haven't done their military service. And now we're hearing many more cases of men who have finished their military service but are being kept in the reserves, that they can be called up at any time, or their name is on a checkpoint and someone has decided that, you know, that they need 10,000 more men, and so they're going to take the first 10,000 that they get who are reservists. They will just be taken too at any time. So there isn't really a way for men in Syria who are of military age to live their lives comfortably unless they have a government job or are of a high enough social class to avoid being taken or to be able to pay bribes. That's the other way that they do it.
What consequences would a Syrian man of military age face if he is caught dodging or trying to flee military service?
As far as I have been able to suss out from the interviews and the other things that I've and people I've talked to, if a young man is caught trying to flee the country without doing his military service, he will be taken back. He will be basically pulled into military service. In the best case scenario, he will be caught and put into military service. In the worst case scenario, he would be imprisoned or tortured or killed or any of those sorts of things. But I think because the regime needs bodies to fight, it really has tried to grab those people and put them in military service. One of the things that I think is also pushing young men to flee military service, many of them have family members, cousins or older brothers who were not able to escape military service and who are in the military, and they haven't seen them for years. A couple of years ago, the regime decided that it was going to stop letting men in the military go home for holidays because men weren't coming back once they had been allowed to go home for 2 weeks of family leave or something. They weren't coming back to report at their base for military service. So they have stopped releasing them for those sorts of things. They've also kept them in longer than they used to. So it used to be 18 to 24 months. Now I've heard from people that it's 3.5 years, 4 years, they have not seen their brothers or cousins come out of the military. So that's another real push, because a young man or a family will say, like, so we've got one brother, one son in the military. He hasn't come out for years. I don't want the same thing to happen to myself or my brother.
What was your research aimed at doing?
Well, the research that I conducted was just interviewing people who had fled Syria. So we have about 150 interviews with people in Jordan and Lebanon, and then I've done other less formal interviews in Turkey and in Europe and elsewhere. So it was just interviewing people generally with a number of questions, open-ended questions to sort of learn about people's lives, what life had been like before they fled Syria and what their lives were like today. One of the topics that I thought was the most pressing that came out of this was that there were all these men fleeing conscription and nobody was talking about it. I mean, at the time when we did the work back in 2012 and 2013, because I speak Arabic and because I know Syria fairly well, it really struck me that this was a really important topic, because people were fleeing because they didn't want to fight. They didn't want to kill other Syrians. They didn't want to be engaged in this. And yet nobody was addressing them as human beings with choices who were choosing not to fight. And instead, the international focus was on women and children, which is great. I mean, women and children need protection too. But so do men. And to me, if men are the ones who are doing the fighting and being forced to fight, and yet you have this huge number, I mean, hundreds of thousands of people who don't want to fight, and yet we're not paying attention to that or listening to them, we're really doing a disservice both to people, but also to, I think we're playing a kind of role in the continuation of this fighting. We should be encouraging people to leave, encouraging particularly men who would be dragged into the fighting to leave. Because if the regime doesn't have people to fill its army, it can't keep this up.
You say that there is a stigma or stereotype used to define Syrian men fleeing to neighboring countries as potential threats or instigators of trouble. How has this stigma developed?
Well, I think this is part of a larger global narrative that has developed around Middle Eastern men and Muslim men. And so they are seen as a threat. They're seen as coercive and backwards and willing to fight. And they're all seen as sort of potential terrorists. So I think that this is this idea that young men in particular, who are unanchored from families, are much more willing to become extremists and do extreme things. And while statistically that's probably true, it paints them with such a broad brush that it doesn't actually look at the reasons why they fled or the very principled and very difficult decisions they made to leave behind their country, leave behind their families and their loved ones and their friends in order to not participate in violence and in order to not participate in picking up arms and killing other people. one of the things that strikes me is we're very aware of these kinds of nonviolence in many countries in the world, and we're trying to push people towards more nonviolence. And yet these men have chosen not to be violent. They've chosen nonviolence as a path, and yet we don't respect them as individuals for those choices. So it's that kind of stigmatization of them as Middle Easterners and them as Muslim men, and that's what they kind of fall under. The stigma, though, carries into the surrounding countries around it, Jordan, Lebanon, Turkey, less so Iraq. Iraq actually has many more Syrian men in it than it does Syrian women by 10%. But I think in Jordan, Lebanon, and Turkey, they also see many of them as unanchored to families. They're not with their parents or brothers and sisters and things. And so that also is sort of dangerous. They see them as not anchored to society and not tied to society.
Has your research achieved its objective?
There's a mixed answer to that. And in some cases, I think there has been, certainly in Europe, a move to not immediately throw young men out because they are young men. Syrians who are fleeing the conflict have been allowed to stay. Syrian young men who are fleeing conflict have been allowed to stay. But it's not because they are young men, it's because they are Syrians. So I think that in that sense, the issues that they face have not really been addressed, and I don't think they've been addressed around the globe. I just don't think there's been an awareness that forced conscription is a reason why people flee, and instead they get just seen as their demographic, as young men or men. And so, no, I mean, I guess the ultimate answer is no. I don't think it's been taken into consideration or addressed in a way. There's still very little programming for men in the international communities, areas where they deal with refugees. There are a few areas where they target young men for interventions, but they're still by far the least served community among the refugees.